Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So, you know, we should start this program with some assessment of what we would like to have this program accomplish. Rosemary, what would you like to discuss in this program today? Rosemary Armeo from UAlbany.
I would like to talk about Twitter is not representative of public opinion, according to a new poll, and the whole Bob Woodward story.
Okay.
Was he threatened by the White House?
Alan, do you have a particular topic that
you'd like
to talk about today?
I'm so glad that you're asking me. I want to talk about the new press that that the Times Union, which is really very challenging and a terrific thing for the capital region of New York,
good,
where we're broadcasting from, because, you know, and everybody else is running away from this. And
just a headline is fine. You don't have to do a whole dissertation while we're here.
To the public, you have been set up.
I'm actually the only one who's written a dissertation in this room.
Oh. So, yes, indeed. That's Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. And I also want to talk about one of the ways that we might be able to survive in the internet age, which might be more journalism. Imagine that. But we'll start first with Rosemary. You're upset about Bob Woodward's deal,
I was offended by this. Bob Woodward got into, I don't know what to call it. It's not even an argument. He got into a disagreement with a source in the White House.
And we know who the source is, Jean Sperling.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. A very close source. And Woodward was saying that sequester is all Obama's fault, despite press and public opinion that the Congress is mostly to blame. They got into an altercation. The next day, Sperling calls him and apologizes. And Bob Woodward, in talking to Politico and going on some morning shows, some talk shows, made it sound like this was the worst assault on the press since the Nixon era. The Post repeated that. And I work with journalists who really have been attacked by their government. And I just think this is so conceited and so self-absorbed, and it just does not help the image of the press in this country.
The exact words were, "You'll regret publishing that,"
right,
which in Sperling's explanation, I believe, and Gene Sperling used to be an economic advisor to Mario Cuomo here when he was the governor of New York, so we knew him as a young man
back in the day
who didn't have much of a jump shot. But the fact of the matter is, what he said was, you're going to regret that in the sense that you're going to look foolish.
Yeah.
And I do think that it is kind of ridiculous, but it plays against the backdrop of politicians attempting to manipulate media coverage, which we see a lot of.
Of course, this governor, Andrew Cuomo, is really famous for that. And many of us have, who don't deserve it, because we're not that important, have people assigned to us who call us on a fairly regular basis and then talk to us about, you know, something we wrote, or and never in a mean voice, ever. You know,
Alan, I think you're very important. But
don't be condescending with me, Rex.
But here's one of the things that this governor has done, and we've written an editorial about this. There is a software that they have set up, actually an internal website called News Tracker, that is a requirement of every public relations officer and every state agency that any interaction with the press gets entered into this website, and it's reviewed by the governor's press office. Is this to maintain uniformity of message?
No. Well, it does, but that's not the reason.
Well, it's so close to the thing you used to break up the walnuts with.
Well, it could indeed be that. It's just like...
it's
a lot like...
losing our high tone here.
It's it really does suggest that there is an effort, and this comes in the context of the what we discussed last week, I believe, the highway engineer upstate who, while when the State Department of Transportation didn't respond to the Adirondack Daily Enterprise request for information about the response to Hurricane Sandy, or was it earlier?
Earlier. Mm-hmm.
He talked about what a wonderful job they had done and how they had really worked hard. And this engineer, after 25 years in the job, was pushed out of his job as a result of having spoken to the press when he was not authorized to do so.
So the issue was not that he had said anything detrimental about the Cuomo administration, but that he had spoken to the press at all.
Yeah.
And we can't have that. We have to send a signal.
So Bob Woodward maybe was not threatened, but certainly what happened to him, you're saying, highlights a bigger problem for the press.
Which is a journalistic arrogance.
Well, what? He's journalistic arrogance or Rex is saying?
No. Bob Woodward. This is probably the most famous guy in America when it comes to
journalism.
Investigative reporting. And I happen to be, I have to admit something that I don't really want to admit. But I was on the Great Bike one morning and I happened to come upon Morning Joe, who I detest. And there was Gene Sperling on the same panel with Woodward.
Mm-hmm.
And they were duking it out nicely. And Sperling was saying, you know, did I ever say, and Morning Joe was saying, no, you never said that. And so what we have now is a situation in which, you know, it's out there. It's already been spoiled. The most famous journalist in America has taken it upon himself to say this is like the Nixon administration. And it was nothing of the kind. And he admits it. That's disgusting.
But now let me just say, and I know that you don't really much like to have criticism of Barack Obama, but let me say that this administration has not been good about dealing with aggressive reporters, that print reporters basically have been shut out of the White House in favor of letting the president speak to local television news anchors.
A strategy I agree with, by the way.
Why?
What do you mean why?
Well, it does shut out the medium that's most likely to go in depth, to question, to not just go for a soundbite.
Well, that's a good way of putting it, Rosemary Ormeo, but there is another way of putting it, which is that people expect a fair break. And I have for years cited this service club that I gave a talk to, and everybody's grousing about the press. And what were they saying? They were saying, and I said, how many of you have had something to do? They all raised their hand. How many of you think they got it right? And every hand goes down. I mean,
a cheap shot. It's
If I'm critical, it's a cheap shot. If you're critical, then it's okay.
Okay, everybody who loves WAMC, put their hands up. And everybody is out there saying yes. Okay, everybody who likes everything on WAMC, put your hands up. And so everybody's hand goes down, right?
No. That's not what I asked. I asked, have you had one major story written about you? And were you satisfied with it? And they weren't.
And did you ask about one major story broadcast about them? Because the attitude is the same. None of us get it right.
And I would rather... Exactly. I would also rather have aggressive questioning of the president than to have pushovers. And what they're doing in the White House is they're taking advantage of the fact that electronic media is easier to push over than print because you have to go with the soundbite you're given rather than having an editor back in the newsroom saying, but wait a minute, what about this question? No, let's put this in. Let's give some context to it. And there is very little context in local television news.
Okay, Rex, I've heard you. And there's a period, I think, at the end of your sentence, and now I get to go. And I tell you right now, there is a sense that if it's bad, it's going to be there. If it bleeds, it leads. This is the game that is played. Now, with that said, let me just compliment you and your staff of state reporters here in Albany who have done such a phenomenal job of exposing stuff that needs exposing. I mean that.
Well, thank you. I will pass that along in case they're not listening.
They're listening because you're their boss.
Including a story about a state senator who has two star exemptions on two different properties.
You better explain what that is.
It's no matter how many houses you own, you get a tax break on your primary residence after a certain age.
But if you do it on two, that's not
illegal,
according to the law.
But she did it on a condo as well as on a house that she and her husband owned. She blamed her husband for it. It's a matter of less than $1,000, if I read the story correctly. And The husband didn't comment. She said, it's a mistake. As soon as I found out about it, you know, I'm paying it right back. And then we quote a whole bunch of other people saying, well, you know, there's a lot of these mistakes. And usually it's greed. And that's, that's an expose, but it's a little bit hot.
No, it was a good story.
And it was heavy-handed.
And it's a good story.
But this is an example. This is an example of what Rosemary is citing is putting the people alongside it saying, yeah, there are a lot of these mistakes made. That is putting something into context, which is, again, my point, that in print, you do that. You find you don't just let the person have the soundbite. In her case, State Senator Kathy Young from out in Western New York, her soundbite would have been, it's my husband's fault. He makes all the decisions about money, which is a rather amazing thing.
It was for a woman in politics and, you know, a very big decision-making.
Well, you know.
They make a few decisions about budget in the Senate.
Well, in my house, my wife, Roselle, pays all the bills and makes all of the major financial decisions. And I'm not unwilling to give her that credit because we have a mutual relationship. We live together and we divide up the work according
to... Alan, we're not talking about credit. If she committed a felony, would you hang her out to dry and said, oh, it's all her fault?
No.
And how many property tax exemptions do you claim, by the way? Oh, wait, you're a New York State resident for that purpose.
That's right. And
in fact,
I'll be honest with you. Well, no, I won't. Go ahead. I thought better of it.
Anyway, if you're just joining us, it's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith here. Happy to help you. What did you say you wanted to talk about, Alan?
I want to talk about your press.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, this is dead serious stuff.
Okay, dead serious.
You guys at the Albany Times Union, the Hearst Albany Times Union, like a salmon swimming upstream, have decided that you're going to take a big risk. You're going to build a beautiful new press, which is going to do everything possible that, you know, a press can do. All kinds of color all over the place. What else is it going to do?
Well, it's going to enable us to print quickly, more efficiently. It's a sharper reproduction, less expensive because the plates that you use don't use all the metals and chemicals. So it's much less expensive to buy the raw material and so on. It's going to just be and you can run it a lot faster, 80,000 copies an hour. Actually, if you print it in a mode called collect, you can print 160,000 copies an hour, which is about four times faster than we can go now. And we'll probably take on some commercial clients, meaning we'll print other stuff for other people. So that's revenue.
How about other newspapers?
Probably so.
Last week when Ira Fussfeld was on, he was talking about his press that's in the basement of the Kingston paper, which hasn't been used for years, even though it's a fairly good press.
Yeah.
So what can you offer other newspapers that will make them come to you and not use their own presses?
Well, a lot of newspapers are doing this. Most recently, the Cincinnati Enquirer started printing at the Columbus Dispatch, even though those two papers in Ohio are not that close together. But in Cincinnati, they decided they didn't want to have the high expense of running and maintaining your own press and the labor cost associated with all those positions.
But you have to amortize, right? Can you tell us how much the press costs?
I cannot.
You cannot. Okay.
How will this improve journalism? Will deadlines go back? Will more news fit into the paper?
Well, there are two ways to answer that. Yes, there will be three ways probably to answer that, actually. There will be later deadlines for the late news stories. This is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Second, we have made some improvements to the product that are going to be unveiled when this new press starts running, and we'll be on WAMC here talking about it, whatever the first day is.
We're not going to be doing anything, and this show doesn't show up until Sunday, so why don't you just
We're still 10 days out. We have a target date, but we don't know for sure that we're going to make that target date.
I see. Well, you don't blame
me. We're aiming for the
19th of
March.
You don't blame me as a journalist for trying to get the story here.
I think it's a wonderful thing and quite unusual in the electronic media. So it's a
you'll pay for
wonderful, it's a wonderful thing. And the third way in which this is good for journalism is that if you reduce costs for production, supposedly, the notion would be you have money for journalism. You have money to maintain your newsroom. So the financial success of a newspaper helps to preserve.
Well, how do we know that
it
won't go to the
smirk of cynicism on my face at this moment?
Yeah, how do we know it's? I'll do more than smirk. I'll actually put it into words. How do we know it won't go to the profit side of the corporation?
Well, you know, as they say, no margin, no mission. You have to make money in order to sustain the enterprise.
That's true.
Same thing here. You know, otherwise you wouldn't do fund drives interminably.
Oh, please stop the cheap
shot.
But I want to know whether or not, you know, this has implications for organized labor, for example. In other words, if you're printing the paper in a much quicker time, will that mean that people are paid less?
Paid less? Wouldn't they be paid?
Well, they're paid by the hour.
Oh,
You see my point?
You may be going into areas that I'm not that familiar with.
Okay, no,
I'm just
so
the
sorry.
Editor. But that's an interesting question. I don't
think
so.
I'm just nothing but an electronic journalist trying to...
You're doing very well, I might add.
Yeah,
you've learned a lot in this job. So basically the notion is that one of the reasons that newspapers are shutting down, our course is very different from what's going on, for example, in Syracuse, where they're now only delivering the newspaper 3 days a week. It's a paper roughly the same size as ours, a lot of the same notions of family-owned company. But the problem is, if you don't reduce some of these production costs, you're not going to be able to sustain the journalism.
What kind of press do they have in Syracuse?
They've got a beautiful press. They invested a lot of money about 10 years ago in a great press. VFOG, it's called. It's a German company like ours.
So why do you think it'll be different in Albany than in Syracuse?
We think that we've made a smarter strategic investment. We're not putting as much capital into it. Up front, it's not the huge capital cost. We have this brilliant...
So much down and so much a week.
Yeah, basically. And this brilliant guy who came into our paper from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel figured out how to squeeze this press into an existing building where we used to have these huge rolls of newsprint, so we didn't have to build a new structure, which is part of the huge cost usually associated with this kind of thing.
Now, how about newsprint itself? This is one of the big expenses newspapers have.
Yeah.
Is there any way this is going to reduce that?
Yes, because the size of the page is going to be somewhat smaller. I forgot about that. That's another one of the efficiencies. We're going to cut an inch off each side and an inch and three quarters off the bottom, which actually gives you a bit of a better dimension, and I think people are going to like it a little better. We'll add a couple.
Less words, less news.
Yes, we're going to be writing a little bit shorter stories, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No,
I've always thought
Rex is my friend, and this is my hometown newspaper, but it is when editors start talking about how it's good to cut staff or word, and that makes for better journalism. Beware, consumers.
The stories that are sometimes flabby, let's say, are the ones that we're going to go after. We will probably reduce. We're reducing the image size by 22.5%, and I'm saying let's make most stories about 15% shorter. And I think that people will like it. In fact, your average reader spends 22 minutes with the paper, meaning some people only spend a few seconds.
How do you know that?
The research has shown this.
Some of us would spend more if there were more interesting, meaty stories. And if you're cutting 15%,
Sheesh,
that's hard to do.
Rosemary, you are so mean
These are questions that Rex is going to get.
He has
answered these questions for many other people.
It's absolutely
people
true.
People want to know, I'm a print journalist.
Some stories.
What is that in front of you? I thought it was a microphone.
Have to be long. Well, this is different. This is public radio. But some stories have to be long, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And some stories should be shorter. And one of the reasons you do some stories shorter is to make room for the stories that need to be longer. And our goal, you know, we believe, as you know, as I often say here, that the stories that make a difference, the ones that are going to preserve us, are the watchdog and investigative reporting. I mean, that we're not going to be sustained by doing, I hate to say this because there are a lot of good lifestyle journalists out there, but that's not what's going to sustain a newspaper, because people can get lifestyle stories from a million other places. What they can't get is the aggressive local reporting, the kind of watchdog
that I complimented you on before.
Which is very kind of you.
And you do. There's no two ways about it. Inevitably, you break the story and then everybody else follows.
One plug for long-form journalism. The best piece that I have seen in the news in maybe 2 years, cover story of Time magazine by Stephen Brill called Bitter Pill, is a 36-page report.
We've been talking about this, and he has really set everybody on their ears with this piece.
John Stewart got it right. He said, this is a silent spring piece of journalism. It's going to change thinking.
Yeah, that's a wonderful notion.
And that was done in a very long form. It's hard to read it all.
Well, you better explain to people what the basic thrust of this thing was.
Brill,
about healthcare.
I will. That's great. Brill did a great investigative reporting trick and changed the question. About healthcare, for years, he says, we have been debating in this country who should pay the bill. He instead asked, why is the bill so high? And he went back and looked at people's actual hospital bills and traced it back to the facilities. And what he found was this outrageous charges based on completely arbitrary, I say measures, but there is no real measurement. It's just made up, really horrible methods of collecting money, and people are being bankrupted by the size of the bill. It's not doctors or nurses who are profiting. It's companies who make medical equipment and hospitals. Not-for-profit hospitals make a lot of money.
That's
not the way it's supposed to work. It's an amazing piece of work.
Sure, it is. Now, Rosemary, since we don't always have you here because you're always off doing investigative reporting, I did want to ask you a question. You said in the beginning you wanted to talk about Twitter. Remember that?
Yeah.
What's your issue?
There's an interesting story. The Pew people who do all these, they kind of like investigate
Pew.
Everything. Pew, yeah. Mm-hmm. Investigate modern journalism and public opinion about it. They've looked at Twitter and opinions on it. They figured out a way to code and measure them. And they found that it doesn't really represent what people think, you know, and the media uses it that way. Like, oh, this is what they were saying in the Twitter traffic. Instead, they found that you get extremes. It's either much more
Absolutely.
Liberal or much more negative than public opinion.
Social media does that because social media, you gather people who think like you, right? Your friends. And so naturally it leads to that kind of straight-jacketed thinking. And so you get more liberal, more conservative, right?
Well, no.
Right.
I think you get nuts. You know, I mean, I think that it's not that they're all nuts, but a lot of them are. And you get people who for years have been repressed. You know, they're strange sometimes and they go on the social media and they just vomit.
Or they just want an impact, which may be the same thing. You know, they write something outrageous
whatever,
to get a reaction.
Whatever, but the middle gets left out, and that's why I think this is such an important point that you're making and why I insisted that you bring it up.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful thing. By the way, Stephen Brill, who you were talking about earlier, is not only a smart journalist. This article that he wrote that you're describing is one of the first times I've seen recently him actually exercising his muscles as a reporter.
As a journalist.
But Brill also is a businessman, and he co-founded something called Press Plus, which is a method of creating platforms to help people pay for website content, which is a controversial issue. Their research suggests, get this, that you get more subscription revenue. And this may seem just so self-evident that it's not surprising.
We're self-serving.
You get more subscription revenue on a website if you offer more journalism. Ta-da. Who's shocked by this? But the fact is, the more stories, and they did research involving different size websites, newspaper websites, and they concluded if you want to sell journalism, you have to do journalism, that you can't get revenue for a website that is just all about entertainment and fluff.
Well, it's taken us a long time to get there. I mean, I remember some editors who said in the beginning, we're going to hold some of it back. We're not going to let it all go. And it turns out that that's not the way to go.
Turns out that even though you can get a lot of page views by putting glitz on there, you know, you get the Miss Universe pageant swimsuit competition, you'll get a lot of web traffic. But that isn't what people are really willing to pay for. What they're going to pay for is serious journalism.
As I announced last week, I have actually done something that I consider to be totally reprehensible. I'm giving Murdoch money because I bought a subscription to the Wall Street Journal, which has been absolute in their paywall policy. You can't get it otherwise. And they do some very good work. And the idea of Rupert eating another piece of, you know, whatever, shrimp is not...
A subscription in what form, by the way? Did you get digital or print?
Digital.
Good. Because you know one of the advantages is if you get the digital form here, you can get the Greater New York section. The print version of the Wall Street Journal that comes upstate does not have Greater New York. Yeah.
Well, the single kindest, best article that's ever been written about me came out of that New York section, of the Metro section. So I've always wanted to...
For that reason alone.
I've always wanted
that
to thank...
That sells
it to me. If you want to see it, you just go to Ralph Gardner Jr. and you put in Shark Talk next to it and you'll find this wonderful piece.
There it was.
While you're Googling, look up Bitter Pill, too. Good reading.
Bitter Pill. This is a great thing. That's the name of the Brill piece, right? Yeah. Bitter Pill. Great thing.
Oh, who cares about that?
Who cares about
or
that?
Or Silent Spring, for that matter.
Absolutely. Finally today, in our last minute of the program, we'll just point this out. The annual count of women's bylines in journalism, not a good factor, folks. It shows that in terms of the overall gender of book reviewers, authors, and so on, it is shrinking, actually.
Why, Rosemary, do you know?
No. In fact, a group, Journalism and Women's Symposium, has begun a campaign to get more women's opinion on opinion pages. And part of the problem is women don't try for it, and we don't know exactly why not.
So,
they self-edit. They don't want to go to the trouble. We can't quite figure it out.
There was a piece just the other day on the BBC in the middle of the night. And they were talking about, you know, how come so many women don't get
it's
because
like
they don't put themselves...
They don't put themselves out. It's like women running for the Senate or for the House. Why aren't there more? Some of it is prejudice, absolutely, but some of it is the women themselves.
And the premise was, what if women ran the world?
We really ought to.
I believe they do. And that's the end of the program for today.
Boy, like
so there
go
we go. We're out of time.
Right,
and
next week.
The world goes on, and we'll see you next week on The Media Project.
I've even met a genius who swallows rattlesnakes. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people, like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people.
They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Publishers are such interesting people. Their policies an acrobatic thing.